number one internet radio network in the world. Peace and love.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host for Spiritual Hollywood, and I'd like to give a shout-out to Don Newsom over at BBS Radio and Seth, and thank them for giving us this wonderful platform to raise consciousness using Hollywood. I have a wonderful guest this evening by the name of Ellen Snortland, who recently was in the Doodah Parade for the world's largest outdoor wedding shower, and her groom-to-be is Ken Gruberman, and it's the Snortland Gruberman wedding, and my sacred partner John Steller and I were also in this parade wearing our shower caps and robes, and it was just a riot. It was so much fun, and talk about outlandish, witty, creative, funny, talented, what a person this woman is. Just go ahead and look at her website at www.ellensnortland.com.
No, it's no Ellen, it's just snortland.com.
Oh, there's no L in it?
No, there's no Ellen.
It's Ellen.
Snortland.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's what the problem was.
Yes.
It's www.snortland.com, snortland.com. And if you also go over to www.beautybitesbeast.org, that's a place where you find out about the documentary that Ellen is producing and hopes to direct. And there's a trailer there you can watch that's really wonderful. And it will inspire you very, very much when you look at it. Again, that's www.snortland.com. And what was so funny about the Doodah Parade in Pasadena recently was that on Fox News, I believe that Ellen and Ken were introduced as the Land wedding and Gruberman wedding. It was very funny because they would all snort and it was hilarious. You had to be there. It's the Doodah Parade. What can I say?
Yes.
So what I'm going to do is just give you a bit of an idea of Ellen by reading a short bio, and then I will bring her on and you can get an up close and personal feeling for who this wonderful person is. Ellen Snortland has her Juris Doctorate from Loyola Law School, Los Angeles. Her work as an author, self-defense advocate, and instructor has been featured on Dateline NBC with her book, Beauty Bites Beast, a regular columnist for the Pasadena Weekly and frequent contributor to Ms. Magazine. She's a tireless advocate for women and girls and physical safety for all. Her acclaimed one-woman show, Now That She's Gone, is a comic memoir about growing up Norwegian-American. And Snortland has attended United Nations World Conferences and annual UN meetings as a UNA delegate, co-chair of 50-50 Leadership and Journalists. Ms. Snortland believes that think globally, act locally is vital for women and girls. Females of all species know how to protect themselves, and it's a birthright for human females, too. She says there's nothing more local than one's own body, and that's the truth. She is currently focusing on having Now That She's Gone produced in a regular theater venue and touring it, as well as raising funds for it and directing it. Beauty Bites Beast is a documentary based on her self-defense advocacy. Again, it's www.snortland.com. That's lend.com. And www.beautybitesbeast.org. And without further ado, I'd like to bring on Ellen Snortland. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, how are you? So excellent. You like my phonetic spelling of land.
I love that. That is so funny. I can't, you know, I'll be driving along at a red light and I'll just hear that in my head and crack up.
Oh, that's good.
Because it made such an impression on me at the Doodah Parade.
Well, my fiance, Ken Gruberman, and I were laughing when we first started to get serious and said, you know, the worst two last names we've heard in a long time are our own, Gruberman and Snortland. And combined,
right,
we make the Gruber snorts.
The group, that's what it was. The Gruber, like that.
Yes.
That's what you did.
Gruber.
That, yes, that's it. That was so funny. And to do that on Fox News in the morning was, I'm sure that woke up a lot of people.
Well, yeah. Yeah, the five people that were up at that time of the morning.
Well, we were up, and that's what counts.
That's right.
Yes. So you're doing a one-woman show called Now That She's Gone.
Yes.
And that's going to be Friday, March 28th. And if people call and make reservations before Monday the 24th, they can get in free?
Absolutely. They can email me. That's probably the best way to do it, which is my email address. They can either go to my website and email me through there, or they can email me at ellensnortland@mac.com.
Okay.
But probably easier to go to my website. And
okay.
Yes, if they reserve before March 24th, they're welcome to come in free. After that, it's $10.
Right, and that will be at the Academy for New Musical Theater at 5628 Vineland Avenue. That's near Burbank Boulevard in the fabulous North Hollywood, California, 91601. So check that out. And why don't you give us a little bit of background about what inspired you to write Now That She's Gone and to get that up as a one-woman show?
Well, I think it's really such a perfect topic for your show, Katie, because my show, Now That She's Gone, is, I think, a piece that was the easiest thing I've ever written, and also because my mother never spoke to me when she was alive, and after she died, I think that I just kind of sat down and channeled this piece. That sounds, you know, oh, I don't know, kind of wooey-wooey to more cynical listeners maybe, but...
This is a radio show to talk about that on.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well,
if it's on BBS radio, it's definitely not mainstream.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I've always heard artists talk about moments where they felt like they just opened up their heart and something came out. And
yes.
That's how I feel about this show. It's a memoir piece about my mother, who I surmise had a neurological disorder but hid it quite well. And I'm not going to say what that is because I don't want to give the punchline away, but I basically go through a roadmap of my childhood, my teenhood, and my adulthood, and I'm just such an out-there human being. My mother couldn't have been less out there, and in a lot of ways, I acted like a organ grinder monkey. I mean, just to try to get her to smile my entire life.
Wow.
And it's a pretty normal story for a lot of actors that had an unresponsive parent, and you know, they develop comedy as a way to deal with the pain, number one. Number two, to get some kind of response from a non-responsive parent. So
yes,
it's got that universal theme. When I wrote it and read it out loud for the first time, people were laughing and also crying. It was a surprise to me in some ways. And then I thought, well, you know, of course baby boomer-aged women are going to like this. It's also historical because it kind of goes through some of the strides we've made as women in the past four decades, and I thought, well, you know, women my age will like it, but then I found out that men liked it too, because in some ways, men have to deal with non-responsive parents, especially fathers, in a lot of households where the boy just never measures up, or the father's disappointed somehow. So the men that have been to my show also are moved about it. So
right.
I remember in particular one show I did, this man in his 70s came backstage and held my hand, and there were tears streaming down his face. And
aww.
He said, "This is the first time that I've been able to forgive my father." And it's like, it's a piece of work that really encourages forgiveness and acceptance and just having a whole lot of fun.
Wow, that sounds like a show for everyone, as a matter of fact, because, you know, even if our parents were the most conscious people on the planet, you know, nobody's perfect and we all have stuff. So it's a good idea to, and thank you, by the way, for putting something like that up on the boards and having the wherewithal and inspiration to create a one-woman show that has a very powerful message like that, Ellen.
Well, thank you.
Because, you know, our parents mean, you know, they're our very, very earliest foundation and beginning, and they're the only gods that we know. And because they're the only gods that we know when we're children, we believe every word they say. So if they say unkind things to us or neglect us or ignore us, we take it personally, and it gets stuck in our subconscious mind.
How could we not?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So brava for doing that, and I'm so looking forward to seeing that show on the 28th. I'm really excited to see it.
I'm so glad you're coming.
Yes, me too. And it's, you know, we could, John and I could walk from our sanctuary, which is where we live, in a sanctuary. We could walk to the theater probably in about 10 minutes.
Oh, that's great.
I know. I love that. It's wonderful.
Well, and for the Scandinavian and Northern European listeners, they're really going to see that stoicism that my mother had. And for all those years that she was basically not responding. I just thought she was being, you know, super Scandinavian or, you know, but as it turns out, I think it was something else. But anyway, but it crosses cultures, too. Gloria Steinem, when she saw it in New York City, brought two guests of hers from Kenya, and they were able to relate to it, too. And one time I did it at the United Nations for the 50th anniversary of the Women's Commission, and a whole group of women from Taiwan came to see my show, and I thought, isn't that odd? Of all the things they could have selected to come to, there was kind of a menu of different events that you could go to when you were visiting New York City. They picked my show.
Wow.
And afterwards, they gave me a standing ovation, and they were taking their pictures with me, and I took one of the women aside, and I said, I'm so happy you have this response, but I don't quite understand what the connection is with Taiwanese women and Norwegian women, you know. And she says, oh, you know, our mothers ignore daughters, too.
Oh.
Oh, and it just broke my heart. But
wow.
When I think about it, in a lot of cultures in Asia, the daughter is considered to be second class and you know, doesn't get the kind of attention the son would, for instance. So
Wow. Well, you know, being are you an only child?
No. But I have two sisters, that one's 7 years older and one's 14 years older. So in some ways I have had the kind of environment that is kind of like being an only child, because they left the house, you know, when I was old enough to care.
So you were the baby, and your mother used up all her energy on raising those two first.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We could look at it that way, I guess. But
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing this show so that I can get more of an idea of what was really going on in the dynamic between the two of you.
Yeah.
And how that shaped you into being this vivacious, courageous woman that you are, and such an advocate for self-defense and people not beating up on each other.
Right, right.
So,
well,
I love that.
You know, the adage, one teaches one what one must learn. You know,
yes.
And I had to really learn how to set boundaries, as
yes.
many people need to learn how to do
mm-hmm.
that. You know, if you cannot say no and mean it, your yeses aren't as powerful either.
Right.
And a lot of us are shamed into not really being able to say, no, I don't want that, or no, you can't do this, or, you know, across this line you shall not cross.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've dedicated most of my adult life now to teaching women and girls in particular, and that's not to say I don't care about men and boys, because I absolutely do, but I find that more women and girls are clueless about setting boundaries than I care to even fathom. You know,
oh, I know.
So that's really what I've dedicated my life to. And one of the things, too, just always including men and boys in this conversation, I have been really moved by the number of emails and letters I've gotten from fathers with daughters who read Beauty Bites Beast, and they say, oh my, I had no idea that the experience of life can be so radically different for a female than it is for a male.
Mm-hmm.
I just had no idea. It's not that I didn't care, I just didn't know.
Right. Right. And it's an awareness that a lot of people, you know, they just don't know. They don't see it because it's not happening to them, and they don't understand that, you know, women do go through a lot of things that men don't. And not to say men aren't abused even by women,
right.
because these things happen.
Yeah.
One thing I know for myself is whenever a predator or an abusive person has confronted me, I respond to them in such a way that they decide not to ever do it again.
Right.
And I had to become strong like that. And one friend of mine said a very long time ago that what I needed to learn how to say was that four-letter word, and you,
yeah.
followed by you.
Right, exactly.
I was to learn to say that, and I learned to say that. It wasn't easy. It took a lot. And that those two words, the four-letter word with you following it,
mm-hmm.
are a metaphor for what I had to do to learn to set boundaries.
Yep.
And it was not easy, and it is not easy if you're taught not to do that. If
right.
if you are raised into an environment where you were taught to be to take abuse and not to object to it. You're going to be an adult who goes out in the world and does the same thing.
Exactly.
You can't help it.
One of the things I talk about in Beauty Bites Beast is I use a lot of metaphors in the book, but one of the metaphors I use is how we let mother dogs raise a litter. She doesn't segregate the litter by sex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, little boy puppies, you go over here, you get to rough and tumble and play and growl and grab each other's ears and wrestle. Now, little girl puppies, you go over here and just look pretty and cheer them on.
Right.
I mean, it's like, that's absurd. And, you know, that would be a very unhealthy way to raise a litter of puppies.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't be even having this conversation about setting boundaries if we were talking about any other species other than human beings. And somehow it got really perverted, and so few women really know how to protect themselves. And, you know, at least the thing is that a lot of men don't know how to protect themselves either.
Right.
The difference, however, is that I have very rarely run into a man who doesn't at least think he has the right to or has the ability to. Now, whether he's going to succeed at it or not is a whole different question.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of women and girls who don't even think it's their responsibility. And that gets into a conversation that's kind of dicey, because the truth is that men shouldn't be attacking women. And,
Yes. You
know, that's true. But
mm-hmm.
that doesn't do anything to stop them. The men that attack women don't care that you don't like it.
Yeah. I know that very, very well.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, the person that has the most at stake in learning how to defend themselves is the person that's getting attacked.
Yes.
And so I'm really, when I was doing these surveys that I did when I wrote my book, I asked women, who's responsible for your safety? And some would answer, oh, my husband, my brother, my father, my dog, the neighborhood I live in,
yeah.
the security system. Very few women said, I am.
Wow.
The men I asked said, well, I am. They wouldn't have said my wife, my sister, my,
right.
you know. It
right.
was just like, so that's the disconnect that I'm trying to connect up.
Right.
And
wow.
the women are just as dangerous as men are when it comes to defending their children sometimes, for instance.
Oh, yes.
There's no conversation about that.
Uh-uh.
However, most women don't include themselves in that circle of care or sphere of care, which I think is really interesting, because it doesn't help a woman's children to not protect herself.
Yes.
You know, so.
And like you said, there's nothing more local than your own body.
That's right.
And if someone asked me who's in charge of my safety, I would definitely raise my hand high and say that I am.
Yeah.
Because I learned how to be. And it is a learned behavior, and I'm so happy that you're helping people learn that behavior. It's just there's such an unconsciousness about that, and in the schools today, in the high schools and in middle schools, I actually had to let my son graduate early because it was so dangerous to be at school.
Ooh.
So, is there any way that do you ever want to show your documentary to schools to help educate young ladies?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And how far along are you to having this completed?
Well, I've shot about 50 hours, and I'm raising funds to finish it. One of the added steps to my documentary, which, by the way, is also called Beauty Bites Beast, it's got the same name as my book,
yes.
Is that it's mostly shot with Spanish speakers.
Mm.
And I'm not fluent in Spanish, so I've had to go through the extra step of finding translators and transcribing footage into English for me, so that I can, you know, finish the film. So I would say I'm about a quarter of the way through, and it has the potential to save lives and the potential to really alter the way that women hold their own.
Well, didn't you say that there's like 300 women have been killed in the last 12 years in Tijuana in the factory the factory workers?
Actually, that's in Juarez, and the numbers are higher than that. They're not sure exactly how many, but there has been a rash of unsolved murders, as many as 1,000 on the border between El Paso and Juarez.
Wow.
And through just incredible bungling on the part of the Mexican government, evidence has been lost. There seems to be a conspiracy, a cover-up. There are different theories about what was happening. Some people think that it's possibly a paid sport for rich men to pay to go out and hunt down a young woman, rape her, and then murder her.
Oh, my God.
All the way to organ harvesting to, you know, it's just, it's ugly.
Wow.
It's femicide. There is a relatively large amount of international attention on it, but it's never been solved, and who knows if anybody will solve it. It seems to have stopped right now, but one of the reasons I responded, what happened, Katie, just to give you a little background on my film, a man read my book.
Mm-hmm.
This very kind American man, and he happens to have inherited a factory in Tijuana. And after he read my book, he was just stunned. He had no idea how afraid many women are almost all the time,
mm-hmm.
whether they're walking to work or going home from the factory or in their own home. There's so much domestic violence that a lot of women all over the planet live in basically constant fear of force, of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And he really had no idea. And when he read my book, which, by the way, is not a how-to book. It's not a book to pick up to learn how. It's a how, I call it a how-come book. How come you have the right to defend yourself?
Right.
Anyway, he emailed me and he said, I am just mortified, and I have more women working for me than anyone else. I would say 75% of my employees are women. What would it take to have you come down and train the women who work for me to defend themselves? And I wrote back immediately and I said, could I make a documentary out of this? And he said, well, yeah. So I got some of the best self-defense instructors in the United States together and flew them in to train them on every Friday of August of the year 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched these women transform before our very eyes.
Oh, wonderful.
And we saw these women step into basically being first-class citizens by saying, you know what, nobody ever gets to hit me again.
Oh, what beautiful words.
And
what beautiful words.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's great.
The dignity, the, you know, the wholeness, the completeness. And not only that, but you know that that woman's going to go home and her family will be changed forever.
Totally.
You know,
it stops with her.
Yep.
Yes. And that's, I mean, the impact that that's going to have on women in the world, Ellen, is like it's infinite. You can't measure it. It's just going to affect generations.
Yep.
And I think that's a beautiful thing. And it's like, if I'd read your book when I was 17, even,
mm-hmm.
because I ran away from home and married a very abusive man,
mm-hmm.
and had I known that I had rights, and had I known what I know now, then I would have had quite a different life. But then at the same time, I can't look back and feel bad about it because I've become an advocate myself for empowering people to know that they have a birthright of safety and wholeness and abundance and joy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's my passion and purpose in life is to help restore people to that and
yep.
return to their greatness.
Yep.
And
well,
power.
Me too. No
yes.
wonder we're allies.
Yes, absolutely. So when I heard, I mean, I just thought I was going to be, you know, in a doodah parade or an outdoor wedding shower, and little did I know what you were really, really up to besides getting married and expressing yourself in that wonderful, memorable way. And I believe there are no accidents. I don't know what else I can do to help you move this forward. But whoever is out there listening and you have the wherewithal to assist in getting this documentary completed, please contact Ellen at her website at www.snortland.com. That's S-N-O-R-T-L-A-N-D, just like it sounds, .com. And let her know what it is that you'd be willing to do or how you could help and just get involved.
That's great.
And what's the best way a person could help you right now, Ellen?
Well, I need a team. I need people who know how to write grant proposals, who know how to approach money people. I'm a classic right-brainer. Even though I'm a lawyer, I'm not the business-oriented type person that I know I need. I need partnerships of, you know, people who know how to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also really interested in just connecting into people who have the savvy that I don't. I will get this movie made no matter what. I'm clear about that. But it would be a lot faster and a lot more fun if I had a team.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely support rock.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. How many more hours of footage do you need to be complete?
Well, I want to, let's see. How can I say this most simply? My ideal is to have footage from some Maori women who have taken this form of self-defense training,
mm-hmm.
that had their worlds rocked, and to shoot in a township outside of Johannesburg, South Africa, where another group of women bonded through this self-defense course, white and black women,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, in a culture of post-apartheid, it's really important to find different ways that they're doing that, and this self-defense class that they taught actually accomplished that. So they not only are safer, they're more united as women,
mm-hmm.
and crossing those color lines. So that's on my wish list. And if people have, you know, free flights or free frequent flyer miles they can give me to Johannesburg with my camera person or a producer or whatever, I mean, any number of things I have a wish list for, I'd, you know, love to make that happen.
Okay.
So also to go to New Zealand to see what's up with that particular group of people.
Mm.
So that's my ideal, and I can cut together a really beautiful film with what I have right now, to tell you the truth. But that would be frosting on the cake, because even though the class in TJ is going to be a centerpiece of my film, I want to make sure people have a clarity on violence against women is a global epidemic. There's not one culture, not one country, I don't care if it's the most developed country or the least developed country, violence against women and kids is rampant. And so I don't want anybody to think that this is a Mexican story or a Latin American story.
Right, I can vouch for that.
Yeah, yep. And, you know, the thing is that it's the dark underbelly of our humanity.
Uh-huh.
That we have and have been putting up with this violence against the most helpless part of our families, you know, the women and the children. And, you know, I'm doing what I can to just stop it, because we're wasting human energy. We're making people fearful, and it doesn't have to happen. Violence in a family can stop in one generation.
Yes. Hear, hear.
Yep.
Amen and a woman.
Yep.
I believe it.
A woman.
Absolutely.
The other thing, too, is that I am an advocate for the Universal Declaration of Human Rights,
mm-hmm.
being something that everybody knows and everybody knows about. And I'm also on a mission to have everybody know what the United Nations 8 Millennium Development Goals are.
Mm-hmm.
And the third Millennium Development Goal is to empower women and promote gender equality. And I think women being able to stop violence in their own homes is one of the most powerful things we can do to help people solve other global problems.
Yes.
You know, and also the third article of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is everyone has the right to personal security.
Yes, and I believe, too, that when women are safe, the world will be safe.
Yes, there you have it.
Yes.
Bingo, there you are.
Because we are the makers of life.
That's right.
And we bring forth life, and when we're safe, the world will be safe.
That's right.
And we're the teachers, and we do teach what we most need to learn. And I'm wondering, being that you are such an advocate for self-defense and women being able to defend themselves and ending violence against women, is there something in your background that you could talk about that caused you to be such an advocate?
Well, yes. I wasn't subject to gender-related violence. I didn't suffer a rape, as many of my, as you know, many of us have.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to escape that particular horror, but I came home one night very late, and a man was burglarizing my home, and as I confronted him, I didn't know I was going to run into him, but as I ran into him, he almost plunged a knife into my heart, and
oh.
I screamed so loudly, I actually hurt him, his eardrum, so that he dropped the knife, grabbed his ears, and ran like hell.
Oh, my God. Wow, that's quite a scream.
Yeah,
bottle that.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's what started me on my journey. So, yes, I did have a personal brush with, an incident that turned out very well.
Right. And did you know any other self-defense things to do besides screaming like that?
Nope. And nope. That's what made me crazy. I just went, oh, my God, here I am. I have a law degree. I'm well-traveled. I'm privileged. I have done dangerous things, rappelling. I've flown an ultralight airplane. I've done a lot of things. But, you know, in my life, not one person has ever said to me, Ellen, if anybody tries to hurt you, here are some things you should keep in mind, or this is what you should practice, or, you know, it was just a very, very unconscious area of my life. And I just thought that was fascinating. Why is that? Is it inherent? Is it biological? Is it cultural? What is it? So Beauty Bites Beast is really my examining what's up with women and ending violence.
Yes, and awakening the warrior within women and girls.
That's right. That's right. And is it, you know, so I, that's what the exploration is of my book and why I call it, it's a how come book. It's not a how to book.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And are you left-handed?
I'm ambidextrous, actually.
Ah, okay. That explains the right brain. Yes, John and I both are left-handed.
Are you?
In our right minds, yeah. we were wondering the other day what the world would be like if everybody was left-handed and in their right minds.
Uh-huh, that's very funny.
Yeah,
that would
be an interesting play all by itself.
No kidding.
So you need, what, about 20 more hours to get what you want for your documentary?
Yeah, I'd say so. I would guess so. And then the other thing I wanted to say, too, is that my book is now translated into Spanish, and in the Spanish edition, I included the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as well as the 8 Millennium Development Goals.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So I'm doing my 10th anniversary edition this year because the first edition came out in 1998, which it boggles my mind. I thought in a lot of ways I'd be further down the road than I am, but mm-hmm. I realize that this conversation is not just a conversation, it's a cultural shift, and, you know, it just takes a lot of talking to have people start to listen differently and speak differently about women's rights, and, you know, I bring up something that a lot of people are in denial about, something that a lot of people don't want to think about until something happens, and then all of a sudden they want to do something about it.
Absolutely. I think there should be self-defense programs in schools for girls and boys too, particularly for girls, where it could be maybe beginning in seventh grade
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
I actually counsel people when people say, well, how young can I start? I say whenever you start teaching traffic safety to your children, that's another time that you can start teaching people safety.
Ah.
Because, you know, children can be very mean. There's a lot of bullying that goes on, and there are a lot of things you can have a child practice that keeps them safe from bullies and keeps them safe from adults who are abusive. And as we all know, the people that are more apt to harm your children are people you know. That's an unfortunate truth.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to equip boys and girls with skills like telling immediately if somebody has made them uncomfortable, giving them practice and saying no to people who are making them uncomfortable, And that's one of the things that's really empowering, is that you teach kids how to draw boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we do give boys more permission to say no. I mean, if you just think of the most innocent scenario where, let's say, Auntie Jane is hugging Johnny, and Johnny says, "Ooh, I don't want you to hug me," you know, most of the adults will back off and say, "Oh, isn't that cute? He doesn't want to be hugged." But they stop hugging him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a little girl will often be shamed into letting Auntie Jane hug her.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hurt her feelings. She's just trying to be nice. You know, try to be nicer to Auntie Jane and la la. You're basically telling the girl she doesn't have jurisdiction over her own body.
Right, right.
And if you can't set a boundary with somebody who loves you, who can you set a boundary with?
Yes. You know, that's a very good point. And children who have been abused have a really hard time in life as adults saying no.
Mm-hmm.
When they, you know, they say yes when they mean no, and they don't even know they're doing it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they have to be compliant because they survived by being compliant.
Yes.
So,
absolutely.
You know, certainly there's a lot of compassion for that, but it's also, well, the good news is it just takes a little bit to have somebody learn how to set boundaries.
It does. And John and I are writing a book called Transforming Hell, which is to end child abuse.
Mm, how great.
And we both have firsthand stories about that, and we'll be telling his story separately from mine, and then how we met later and what we're doing about it in Transforming Hell.
Oh,
and there's nothing
great
for me. I asked him one day, we were on a little road trip, and I said, "What would make the biggest difference in the world that we could do together?" And he was thinking about it, and I said, "I know, how about we transform hell?"
Wow.
And he looked at me like, "That's a great idea." And I said, "For me, hell on earth for me would be being abused as a child,
yep.
Not having choices when you're a child, not being able to be playful when you're a child, not being allowed to be spontaneous when you're a child. That is hell. Having the God in you taken away by constantly being disturbed and harmed, because you can't feel God if you're not feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling good is the way to get to that. And when you're not feeling good very much, you turn into a grown-up who doesn't feel good very much.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot to break through. So with this book we're writing, we're planning to just show the evolution from the hell and breaking through and transforming it into a life of happiness and joy, which we have today.
Oh.
But it didn't come easy for either
no.
one of us.
Uh-uh. Oh, what a gift. Oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I shared with you a story, one of my stories from Huckleberry Memoirs, the Dog Day story. And, you know, that's a hard one to take, yet it happened, and I sugarcoated it.
Yeah.
So it's a very important thing that you're doing in the world, and I'm just so grateful that you're doing it. And I hear your passion and purpose in your voice, and that's so attractive and contagious. And I'm hoping that everyone listening will, you know, ignite the warrior within and find a way to make a difference in your own neighborhood. Maybe start with your own household. And if you're in trouble or something's going on that shouldn't be, reach out to a shelter or social worker or somewhere. We have lots and lots of resources, don't we, Ellen?
Yes, there are. And if somebody's listening right now and you're in danger, the most important thing is to keep yourself safe and to make a plan. And
mm-hmm.
if that plan requires being sneaky
mm-hmm.
or lying,
mm-hmm.
You know, as a young girl, I was taught to never lie or to be sneaky, but
mm-hmm.
when it comes to your own safety, you need to do whatever you need to do.
Yes.
And a lot of getting away from an abusive situation means doing things that take courage,
mm-hmm.
and you have to have courage to get yourself into a safe place.
Yes. As I shared earlier, the person I ran away and married to get out of my household when I was 17, I ended up jumping out of a two-story building with a sheet with my clothes in it tied up around my back and a cab waiting down the street, and I saved money for months to do that, and I escaped, and the government allowed me to get a divorce without his permission.
Wow.
And they kept me in a shelter until I was safe. So I had to be sneaky, and I had to pretend, and I had to survive.
Yep.
And that's what I did, and I never looked back, and nobody was allowed to hit me ever again.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, it's very, very important work. And what are some of the resources that you know of right offhand, self-defense places, where if somebody doesn't have a lot of money but they really would like to learn this, are there places that could provide that for little or no cost?
Well, the form of self-defense that I most highly recommend is through Impact Personal Safety, and they have classes in West Hollywood, Universal City, and Santa Monica, I believe. And they have never turned away people due to a lack of money. They can either work out a payment situation, or they make scholarships available.
Oh, that's great.
So if this particular listener needs help and can get to a computer, if you go to www.impactpersonalsafety.com,
mm-hmm.
you can see where those classes are. And I recommend padded assailant training. And what I mean by that is there's, with impact-style self-defense,
mm-hmm.
there is a team of a male and a female instructor. The female instructor is very important because she knows in her bones the socialization that women and girls have gone through, which says they can't protect themselves, don't even try. And to break through that, you need to have somebody who doesn't minimize that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the male instructor has a suit of armor so he's padded from head to foot, and there's no way you can hurt him,
mm-hmm.
so that you can learn what it feels like to strike a blow,
mm-hmm.
and practice the things that you need to do in case somebody, God forbids, jumps you or assaults you.
Yeah, and there's some of that footage on your trailer,
right.
on your website, beautybitesbeats.org,
mm-hmm.
and I watched that today, and that the padded instructor looks like a giant.
Yeah.
And it's all padding, and it looks like he's wearing a gigantic padded football helmet.
Right.
And the girls are just beating him in the head, and it looked pretty good to me.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go and take one of those classes.
Oh, yes, please.
Just because you never know.
Please.
Yeah.
Well, I think of the thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars I've been mandated to spend on car insurance. I've never had a car accident, and that's basically money I'll never see again. And, you know, I'm not putting down car insurance.
Sure.
It's important. However, the class that I had at Impact Personal Safety, I've used what I got out of that class day in and day out, keeping myself safe as a pedestrian, just being out in the world, you know.
Yeah.
So I consider it to be pedestrian insurance.
Sure.
You know, and it's amazing how empowering it was.
Well, I imagine that when you're finished with that class that you walk differently.
You do.
You're vibrating differently.
Oh, yeah.
Your frequency is higher.
Absolutely.
Because you're empowered.
Absolutely.
But not
foolish. You know,
no.
Some people say, oh, well, doesn't that give a woman a false sense of security? And, you know, I go, okay, if a woman told you she had learned how to swim and was able to handle water better and not be afraid of drowning and all that, you would never say, well, doesn't that give you a false sense of security? No, it's education. And education makes people smarter, not dumber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't go around to bars picking fights.
Right.
You know?
Well, not anymore anyway.
Not that I wouldn't like to. No, just kidding.
Sure. There's truth in all humor, Ellen. So you're also conducting a class every Tuesday night. As a matter of fact, you're going to be doing it at 7:30 tonight, a writer's workout. Is that something that the listeners would be able to participate in?
I have a very small class, and
mm-hmm.
I'm very happy to have new ones, new students, and especially if you're in the Pasadena or Altadena area.
Right.
And I'm also a private writing coach, and I'm particularly focused on those people who are working on a first-time book. I have a it's called Your First Book Coach. And so if you go to my website, land.com,
yes.
I have writer's workout described there. And it may or may not be your cup of tea, but we have a great time, and I provide a very safe and creative space for people to stretch and move beyond where they ever thought they could be as writers in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, and also, Ellen, I love that you say it's a safe environment for first-time book writers, because there are a lot of people who have something to say that will make a difference for other people, where they've had a trauma in their life and they're not quite sure how to express it and how to get it out.
Right.
And is it safe to really talk about it? Are you able to help coach them to get to the core of that relieve the pressure from it?
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing, a lot of us have been traumatized in the arts. Mm-hmm. You know, we're terribly self-critical about our writing or our painting or our singing or whatever art it is that we love.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody criticized us at some point and it shut us down, and so I'm really able to help people break through that.
That's wonderful. And I also know, being a life coach, that shyness is brought on by somebody having been overly critical when somebody was being gregarious as a child.
Right.
And the overly critical person caused them to repress their spontaneity and their childlike wonder and mm-hmm. childlike essence, and that's what causes shyness. So when I see a shy person, I'm looking right at their injury.
Right.
And it's not endearing when someone's shy to me. It tells me somebody has hurt them.
Yeah, exactly.
And it makes me want to help.
Yeah.
So writing is a wonderful way to heal.
Right.
And the writer's workout would probably be, especially with your expertise and advocacy for self-defense and, restoring people to their power, would be a great place for people who really have a strong message about healing and what they've been through to mm-hmm. contact you for some personal coaching on that,
mm-hmm.
and especially first-time book writers.
Yep.
I believe all of us have at least one book in us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that stopped me for so many years was, it's like I got involved with the cursed hows, like, how do I do it? How do I do it? How do I write a book? And I finally just gave that up and started putting the words on the page.
Yep. Well, one of my mentors, a fabulous man named Jim Bellows, he was the former managing editor of the New York Herald Tribune, and he used to carry business cards. When people would say, do you have a card, he'd hand them this card which says, begin at once and do the best you can.
Mm.
And this is a man who started Tom Wolfe out and Gail Sheehy and all these major American writers, and he believed that that's all you can do, and that really truly transcends what you call the terrible hows. It's like, just do it.
Yes, do it. And you're also a regular columnist for the Pasadena Weekly paper, and what do you do for that column? What is it you write about? Do you write about advocacy? What is it that you regularly write about?
I mostly write about gender issues,
mm.
Although I'm a smart aleck, and if there's something that strikes me that I want to be smartass about, I write about that.
Well, that's probably why people love to read your column, because you're real.
Yeah, well.
And that's important.
I like to have fun no matter what I do.
No matter what. And, you know, what I'm seeing here is, I haven't seen your one-woman show yet, but I have a good feeling that when I do, I'm going to understand a lot of my own personality based on the kind of mother that I had.
Uh-huh.
Because you certainly did turn into a person who knows how to live, even though it sounds like you had a lot of repression around your relationship with your mother.
I did, but she also gave me, I'm so grateful to my mother and father both, but they gave me a very, very secure foundation in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
They instilled in me a desire for social justice. They modeled that. So while my mother was not able to give me what I wanted to have emotionally, she gave me other things that were just gems.
Right.
So that's the other thing you'll take away from it, is that
mm-hmm.
the traditional gifts may not be there, but some very untraditional gifts might be, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I also see, too, that when it comes to parents and children, who the child ends up being as an adult, it can be to a large degree environmental,
mm-hmm.
from the way they were raised. And, you know, not to pick on parents, and it is, if anybody's struggling with something, you might want to go back and visit the roots of where you come from and what that dynamic was like. And reading Beauty Bites Beast would probably have a lot of insights about just having boundaries and reclaiming yourself on many levels. Where is your book available, Ellen?
Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
And you are doing your 10-year anniversary book on Beauty Bites Beast?
I'm writing it right now. I'm doing a new preface and including some of the things I've included in the Spanish edition.
Mm.
It's also being translated into Portuguese right now, and I'll be doing a book tour into Brazil.
Wonderful.
This summer. So.
Wow. When are you getting married?
Oh, I don't know. We're just living in sin right now.
You're living in sin. Well, you know, that can be fun, too. It can actually be more fun.
Yeah.
So, well, that's great. That's great. So you don't know about that, and you've got a lot going on, and Ken has a lot going on. And what is it that Ken does in life, your intended?
Ken is one of, we're both really beautifully blended left and right brainers. We both have overdeveloped corpus callosum.
Mm-hmm. I love that about a person.
Yes. He's a blend of art and computers.
Ah.
He is a musical supervisor and copyist for primarily orchestral music. So that's a fancy way of saying he takes care of the music scores on film and television projects.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then the other side of him is he's like Mr. Apple geek. He's a certified Apple consultant.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So he's an Apple geek.
He's an Apple geek.
I love that. I've never heard that term before.
Well, I just made it up.
Well, it's wonderful. I think you should definitely coin it.
Well, I dubbed his business, which is the Tech Daddy. He's the Tech Daddy.
Right. I saw that at the bottom of his email.
Yeah.
And why don't you tell our listeners where they can go to get a look at some of the pictures from the Doodah Parade?
Oh! I'm not in front of my computer right now, but the Gruberworld.com.
Would it be at the bottom of his email?
I don't know. Oh dear.
Because I can find that in just a second here, and see.
Oh, it's
everything here. Okay. Gruber World, I think, is right.
Yeah, I know that is right, but he's got a home page that's got our photos on it.
It's Gruberworld.com,
mm-hmm.
And if you go there, then you can click on photos and things like that, right?
I think so. You know what? I have a whole link, and if I'm tied down to this landline.
Well, people can actually email you and ask you for it, right?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
The Doodah Parade is a kick.
Oh, my gosh. It ever.
If y'all haven't been out to one, it's like a moving Burning Man.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Exactly. Ken took some of the most phenomenal photos I've seen.
Yeah.
And they were just incredible. I think everybody should look at those.
Oh, and yours were great, too, Katie.
Oh, that was a hoot. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
I walked right into the Fox News van and took a picture of you guys on camera inside the van.
Yeah, it was
that
great.
Was fun.
That was great. We raised about $5,000 that day, too, by the way.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so it was really not only a blast, but it was a very good day for Beauty Bites Beast.
Wonderful, and that's a very important thing, too.
Yeah.
And you were in a wedding gown, and Ken was in his tuxedo.
Yes. With shower caps on.
With shower caps.
Yes. Because it was a wedding shower, after all.
Yes, it was a wedding shower, and it was an amazing wedding shower. I'm looking, is your email address ellensnortland@mac.com? MAC.com to email you to get the address email, to get the website for the photos from the Doodah Parade.
Uh-huh.
I think it would be worth everyone's while.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, when I find it, I'll email it to my little list so people can take a look at it.
Okay. Or through snortland.com, which is land.com.
Right, that one too. we've got 2 minutes left for our interview, and I'm just wondering, Ellen, if you have something in your heart right now that you just didn't even know until I asked this question, what would that be that you could share with our listeners that would be just you sharing authentically yourself from your heart? Something, anything that's there that you feel someone might need to hear right now?
Well, I think that one of my missions in life has been to constantly butt up against our unconscious limitations having to do with gender, whether that's your male limitations or your female limitations, that I believe if you're unconscious about them, they limit you. And I you know, it's just, I am seeing it especially with the presidential campaign and how we are a country that is on the brink of really talking authentically about racism, but we have not really been willing to talk about sexism. And I'm talking about sexism that squelches men just as much as it does women.
Right.
And
so it's gender balance is what we're looking for.
Well, yeah. And,
yeah, very good. Excellent.
You know.
Well, it's the end of the hour right now, and I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being my guest tonight. I've had a blast with you. I knew I would, and I just recommend everybody go out and see Now That She's Gone. That will be on the 28th of March over at the Academy for Musical Theater at 5628 Vineland Avenue near Burbank Boulevard, North Hollywood, 91601. Email Ellen at ellensnortland@mac.com or go through her website at www.snortland.com and check out beautybitesbeast.org and get involved any way you can, even if it's in your own household, first of all. That's where it all starts, actually. So take a deep breath, stand up really straight, and love yourselves, and remember the last six letters of attraction are action. So get in action and create the life of your dreams. Thanks again, Ellen. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Katie.
Good night.